The opinions expressed in the Keeping It Sporty podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Hello everyone, welcome to this episode of the Keeping It Sporty podcast. As always, you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or on our website at keepingitsporty.com. Today, I am joined by a very special guest. He is an RTA graduate class of 89, the former play-by-play voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on Sportsnet, and now the host of Blue Jays Central. I welcome to the show the incredible Jamie Campbell. Jamie, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Elias. How are you?
I'm doing great,
good.
Jamie. I want to know, first things first, what kind of inspired you to pursue a career in sports broadcasting?
Probably the passion I have for sports. That's probably very similar to yours. I don't remember when it began. I'm sure it was as a very, very young man when my father would bring me hockey and baseball cards when I was 3 and 4 years old. And then we'd sit around on Saturday nights and watch hockey night in Canada or watch some ball on TV in the summertime. And like everybody, I was probably 4, maybe 5 years old when it occurred to me that sports became a passion fairly quickly and that I was mesmerized by it in every form, whether that was the major professional sports or Olympic events or auto racing, horse racing, professional golf, whatever it was. If it was on television, I was probably situated in front of it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how so many people start, you know, hearing everyone's stories. It's just a little bit different, but always kind of unified by sports. I think that's really what brings people together, ultimately.
I agree with you because it literally does bring people together. If you think about the most recent World Series with the Blue Jays going 7 games with the Dodgers and the phenomenal ratings that were attached to it. I mean, there were portions of that series where close to half of the population of Canada was tuned in. And one would imagine those were a lot of group settings. Those were families. Those were friends getting together to, you know, to observe a shared passion and a shared desire. One would assume that the Blue Jays win, depending on what game they tuned into. And it was great to be part of it. It was a thrill for me. And it's really nice to see how, even though the Blue Jays lost, everybody I seem to run into says that they feel like it was a victory nonetheless, which is fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, such a close series, such a heartbreaking series, really could have went either way, ultimately. And obviously, you were right in the middle of it, you know, doing your regular thing on Blue Jays Central at the Rogers Centre or in studio, but then you actually got to go to LA and sort of broadcast from there. I mean, how different of an experience would you say that was compared to your regular kind of either go to the Rogers Centre or broadcast from the Sportsnet studio?
It was fun because I always knew that there's been a plan in place at Sportsnet for years that if the Blue Jays end up in a World Series, Blue Jays Central goes on the road wherever it may be. And as we know, it could have been, for example, Milwaukee or, you know, some other American city. It ended up being Los Angeles. And I knew once the Blue Jays had finished off the Seattle Mariners that we would be traveling for games 3, 4, and 5, as we did. It was tremendous to be part of it. We were situated in right field at Dodger Stadium, directly above the Blue Jays bullpen. I had a conversation last week with Jeff Hoffman about where we were parked for those 3 games in Los Angeles. And I said, I never once saw any of you guys, you were so locked in, maybe peer up and see where we were sitting. And he said, oh no, I noticed you were there. Because it was just a remarkable place to be, tucked into the right field corner, the California sun beating down on us at, 5 o'clock local time. The game started 8 Eastern, So it was 5 p.m. in Los Angeles, and my goodness, there was no hiding from the sun. It was almost like broadcasting in a sauna.
Yeah, I imagine it's very, very warm over there. But I mean, just the atmosphere, I feel like, of sitting in Dodger Stadium. I mean, for you, did you really like just sit there and have that moment where you just took everything in? Or was it almost like it didn't feel like a job almost at that point?
Well, truthfully, it's never felt like a job to me. And that's one of the reasons why when I was probably 14 or 15 years old, I targeted a career in this industry. I didn't exactly at that time think it would amount to the things I'm doing right now as a national broadcaster of Blue Jays baseball. But I did spend a fair amount of time during the World Series, whether it was in Toronto or in Los Angeles, remembering even my years at TMU, hoping that, you know, this kind of life would come to fruition. But the interesting thing about those reflections, when you have them in the moment, is that there are things happening in that moment on the field and in the broadcast, and you don't have a whole lot of time to sit around and ponder where you are. You have to focus on the job. And I was raised by a mother and father who had very, very strong worth ethics. So I don't tend to take it easy. I don't take time off to relax during a work day. Any day that I'm assigned to be at the ballpark and broadcast Blue Jays Central, people at work know this. I'm not the most social person in the world because I take my job very seriously, even all these years later.
Yeah, it's incredible, right? Because the amount of dedication, the amount of preparation that you put into it is incredible, and it shows on the broadcasts, no doubt about it.
And I appreciate that.
Especially during that 18-inning game.
That was fun. It wasn't the result people were looking for. My goodness, it went on and on and on. Every time an inning would come to an end and the Dodgers wouldn't score, I'd always look to my right because where our set was situated was very close to the exit to the back parking lot at Dodger Stadium. And there weren't as many people leaving as I imagined there would be. Mind you, it was technically earlier in Los Angeles than it was in most places. In fact, I recall after, I believe it was the 16th inning, looking at the clock and realizing, just as we were about to come on between innings and do a segment, that at that moment it would have been 4:30 in the morning in Newfoundland and Labrador. I remember thinking that distinctly and saying something during our segment about how impressed we were with all of those people in Newfoundland and Labrador who were still up and still watching, because at that point that would have been 5.5 time zones away. And as soon as I threw it back to Dan and Buck in the broadcast booth to resume play, and I guess that would have been the 17th inning, I started getting tweets. Like, I think I got 40 or 50 different tweets, all of them from Newfoundland and Labrador, 4:30 in the morning there, saying, hey, we are still here. We are still watching very proudly. And that was really something I'll never forget.
Yeah, because ultimately, who knows how many times the Blue Jays are going to make it back to the World Series and be in such a position, right? So it was just so much fun to watch, no doubt.
Yeah, true. There have been times with this franchise where a run to the World Series would have seemed not only remarkable, but surprising. Where this particular club was, let's say, in late May, I guess in the end we could say it was surprising, but a baseball season is very long and anything can happen. And I knew that they were constructed in a way that made them extremely competitive. And I think the best part of what we witnessed is that with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., for example, now signed for 14 years, and Dylan Cease coming in as a free agent, and he'll be with the ball club long term. And there are other players that have lengthy contracts, and Treya Savage is just beginning his career. It's hard for me to not think that they won't be back again and soon. I'm not suggesting it's going to be this year. A lot of things have to break their way to get back to the World Series. But this team is now very similar to the Los Angeles Dodgers in that they'll have a very good lineup all the time, a very good pitching staff, a solid bullpen. There's no reason why, in the way the Dodgers do, the Blue Jays can't be repeat customers in the World Series. I envision in the next 10 years, they're in it three or four times, and goodness knows they're going to win at least one of those. So yeah, I think everybody should sit back and enjoy the fact that this is no longer what we'll call a second tier club in the American League. This is one of the powerhouses in baseball now.
I agree. I wanted to touch back a little bit on a point you made about back in sort of that May, June, July time when they were, you know, not bad. They were kind of improving a little bit. They went on that win streak, and then they beat the New York Yankees four in a row for the first time ever at the Rogers Center. And I remember you throwing the broom that day, and it felt different because of, you know, all the animosity, of course, the whole thing with Michael Kay as well in there. But I mean, in your opinion, what was sort of the most memorable moment of last season and maybe just in general in your career?
Well, last season, I'll be honest with you, Elias, my memorable moments usually have nothing to do with what's happening on the field of play. For example, I met a young man during that series, that four-game Yankee series that you brought up, by the name of Ryan Driscoll, and his dying wish was to go to one more game. So he made it to game three, I believe it was, of that four-game series, and then I was able to take him down to the clubhouse afterward and introduce him to people like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Addison Barger and Jeff Hoffman, and he passed away about a week later, and I now have a lasting friendship with his, particularly with his father. And that was a moment where he got a chance to be happy and have an experience with his family that, you know, that made, I guess, the final days of his life manageable. I don't know that for sure. I didn't get a chance to speak to him after we left the stadium that night. But those are the moments that I remember. There were some terrific moments, like that sweep, for example, where I toss the broom, which I do every time the Blue Jays sweep a series. And I've been doing that for about 16 years now. So I understand that Mr. K and the Yankees were a little bit upset, but they would not know that every team gets that treatment, that gets swept by the Blue Jays. And I was feeling a little, I don't know, confident based on what the Blue Jays were showing and the fact that Mr. K on his show had suggested that maybe they weren't a first place team. So it's not like we were trying to stir animosity intentionally. It just happened that comment came out. It caused a bit of an issue. Both Mr. K and I resolved it quite easily the next time he came to town, and I have great respect for the man. So I don't think there are any lingering feelings in that respect. But you might recall, you know, Mason Fluharty and his one major league save in Los Angeles, when they almost got swept by the Dodgers, but they managed to close out the last game, and he was a big, big part of that. There were so many tiny little moments in the season that resonated. Bo Bichette's home run against Texas when, you know, they played a three-game series in Texas. I think they scored four runs in total in a three-game series and won two of those games. And when you think about it and you calculate everything at the end of the year, they're not winning division without that, you know, without that series win against Texas. And they're not winning a division if they don't sweep all four games at the end of the year. You may recall they went into those final four pretty well knowing that the Yankees were sailing at that point, and every game meant something, and they couldn't let up, and they ended up sweeping all four of them and hanging on for the division title, which, of course, allowed them to avoid a wild card series against the Boston Red Sox. So every single victory means something, and every single moment is obviously of great importance. And the best part is we're going to be enjoying it before you know it.
Yeah, I mean, no kidding about how in a 162 game season, one game way back when in May in Texas, whenever, could make that big of a difference. And in this
Right.
case, it truly did.
But remember, they lost games they should have won too,
That's
many times. And that's what is comprised of 162. So I hate to go back and pinpoint one particular effort and say this was the turning point. You can't do that in a 162 game series, but what you can do is you can look at the overall body of work, the individual contributions, career years from people like George Springer, the coming of age for people like Ernie Clement, and to a lesser degree, Davis Schneider, and Miles Straw being a role player coming off the bench and doing what he did, and Alejandro Kirk maturing into this top tier catcher right in front of our eyes. And, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who seems to carry the weight of the world, everybody thinks he should be hitting 45 home runs and driving in 100 plus every year. And then he went off in the postseason. I mean, went off. And we knew we had it in them. It's just that over 162, you need everybody, you need everybody pulling their weight. And it seems that's what happened.
Yeah, you mentioned so many names, Addison Barger being one of them, Tyler Heineman being one of them, everything connected at the right time.
Best backup catcher in baseball, right?
Yeah.
That helped.
Exactly. And that's what really propelled them to even make it to the World Series. Everything connected at the right time. A couple of, lucky bounces here and there, but ultimately they had the talent, they had the confidence and the grit, I feel, to make it that far.
Yep, they did.
I have to ask you now about, of course, the legendary Buck Martinez, a true professional on and off the field. For that to be his last season, I mean, what can you say about the legacy and impact that Buck will leave behind?
Well, Buck entered Major League Baseball, pardon me, professional baseball, the same year I was born, 1967. So that's how long he's been in professional baseball. He was nearing what he figured was the end of his career when he got traded to Toronto in 1982, I believe it was, 81. And I don't think Buck thought much of it. Perhaps he thought he'd get a little more time in the big leagues, maybe 2 or 3 years, and then he'd hang it up. I think before he left Milwaukee, he was probably thinking of one, perhaps 2 more years. And when he arrived in Toronto, his career started to become reinvigorated, mostly by the fact that Bobby Cox was managing at that time and saw the value of utilizing both Buck and Ernie Witt sort of in a dual role, give them both time off their feet, allow their careers to be extended a little bit. And in his spare time, he would, volunteer to do television whenever necessary with anybody who required it post game. He joined the post game radio show. And it became, this interest that he had turned into a career. And I think it's pretty clear we know Buck Martinez more as a broadcaster than we ever did as a baseball player. And am I surprised that he decided to retire? Not really. That was a pretty memorable season to leave on. He's had some health issues in the last couple of years. He's getting close to 80. At some point, I'm sure he and his wife, Arlene, decided that maybe they'd like to relax and not worry about being on an airplane all the time and spending some time with their grandkids and enjoying the sunset of their lives, so to speak. So we'll see. I'll miss him. I think Buck will probably miss being part of this because baseball has this weird way of getting into your blood and it never really leaves you. I look at him calling his own shot and walking away and I think to myself, will it be that easy for me? I'm not so sure. You get so accustomed to, the coming of spring and heading down to Dunedin, and then opening day is so exciting, and then the season gets underway, and it's hard to turn away from it. So I wish him well. I will miss him. I'll miss hearing his voice. I think I heard Buck's voice over the last 15 years more than I've heard my immediate families. And who knows? Maybe we'll see him back at the Rogers sometime very soon to watch his name go up on the level of excellence.
Yeah, I definitely think that he will be in the, and rightfully so, in the level of excellence, and hopefully we get to celebrate him once again, whether it be this season, next season, whenever it may be. But I agree, it is, you know, as tough as it is that we're not, as fans, as broadcasters, as, you know, everyone really, as tough as it's going to be not hearing his voice again in the broadcast booth, he totally deserves a time off and should relax and enjoy the fruits of his labor ultimately.
We all do, believe me. I've been in this industry now since I was 19 years old. I've been doing Blue Jays baseball for 22 years. It gets harder and harder as you get older. I know that for sure. So everybody deserves a chance to hang it up when they're ready.
Listen, Jamie, you're an inspiration to us all, a true Canadian icon, and a very humble person. So I thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure, Elias. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you. Continued success in the future as well. So
thank you.
You've been listening to the Keeping It Sporty podcast. Don't forget to listen to us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, or on our website, keepingitsporty.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at Keeping It Sporty. That's K-E-E-P-I-N, no G, it sporty, S-P-O-R-T-Y. I've been your host, Elias Strakos. So long, and see you next time.